Quick story. Be careful when you look at a variable deciding whether it's a property of the participant or the procedure. We were doing a, we were trying to replicate some results, and we found out that everyone we could get access to compare these two therapeutic procedures had already had some form of therapy. Not all the same form of therapy. Oh, this is going to be a mess. Now, I could use stratified sampling and create a system within which I've got good balance between the two, but that scared me. We had time, we had money. So what we did is we got everybody who agreed to be part of the study, and we gave everybody 18 months of a particular form of therapy. Sort of the standard practice at the time. Cognitive behavioral, 18 months. All the people who were giving it are trained up, held to the same standards. It's nicely manualized. I mean, everything we could do. The reason we picked 18 months is all the research suggested that between 12 and 14 months, that therapy maxed out. What you were going to get, you got. So we ran it for 18 months. Then we randomly assigned people to the therapies we wanted to compare and claimed that we had really good initial equivalence on prior therapy because we had manipulated prior therapy before we manipulated the current therapy. So you see, you hear the word prior therapy. Every time we used it, that was a property of the participant. In that particular study, it was a property of the procedure. The procedure started way back here. 18 months, then manipulation and comparison. And we got results that didn't match anybody else's. And over the next several years, we were right. Because the different kinds of therapies, we eventually put together a whole taxonomy of the process. But those different kinds of therapies were what was pushing around the results. Depending on who happened to end up in what condition based on what they'd had before. Because one of the things that we were testing was a short form of a therapy. And 12 weeks of therapy doing battle with 5 years of a different kind of therapy loses. You with me? So take a second look and always ask, was this really measured or was it really manipulated? Yes.
So when you did that study, I'm assuming you published it, right?
No.
Oh, you didn't? Then never mind. Because I was going to
It was a study with the military. It was an early PTSD. This is when PTSD wasn't even quite PTSD yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so, yeah, it was...
My question was going to be, have you gotten that published? Because you found a different... Are you more likely to get published when you have a positive... When you see a difference?
When you want to rock the boat, you better obviously be standing on things that you did differently that led you to rocking the boat, and those different things you did are defensible and maybe even a really good idea. Why the hell didn't we think of that before? Okay? The magical thing that this did was involve the families. Now, that's not magical 35 years later, but at the time it was crazy. Why would you do that? Because mom sitting at home is the centerpiece. The kids are the mission. You ever notice PTSD doesn't hit when you're still in mission? The kids are the mission. Boom. Better. No, boom. Like, boom. Because PTSD is just a full-born...
Yeah.
But, then that's probably... I don't know why they didn't publish it. I don't get to make those decisions. My job is to design studies and run analyses and make things as clean and tight as possible using the expertise of 20 people who don't like each other. I like my job. All right, participant assignment. We have already talked about participant selection. Participant selection is who's going to be in the study. That's the population part of external validity. We got them. They're ours. They may abandon us later, but let's not go there. We'll worry about attrition later. This is assignment. creating initial equivalence. Putting people in conditions so that they are equivalent on average before we manipulate the causal variable. I like to use the phrase, who will be in what condition of the study when? The who will be in what condition of the study serves between groups designs, when different people are in different conditions. The when serves within groups designs when everybody's in every condition and the assignment is not what condition you're in because you're in all of them, but when. So I just like that little word on the end. It reminds us that one of the decisions we should be making is whether we're going to run a between or a within groups design. The goal is for participants in each condition of the study to be equivalent on average before the manipulation begins. It's the initial equivalence part of internal validity. It is not, participant assignment is not about external validity. Participant assignment is internal validity. Participant selection is external validity. And I'll show you some variations on pictures you've probably seen to try and drive that in. So we have between and within groups designs. Just wanted to get it on the slide. That's what we're going to spend time about on Wednesday and Friday and forever. All right. This is the first thing I saw when people were talking about getting people in conditions. They do it all the time in 5 or 6 different stats classes. I really like stats. And so we have members of a population and poof, we put them in conditions. Hardly ever. I don't know that I've ever done that, where I started with a sampling frame and went straight to people assigning conditions. Typically it's a two-part process. We start with a population, we have a sampling frame, and we go select people. Participant selection, population, external validity. Now we have a pool of people. Then we engage in participant assignment. Who's going to be in what condition when? This shows a between groups where each member of the pool either went to the treatment or the control. This process of assignment is designed to give us initial equivalence on all subject variables. Let me add to your suspicions. This process is designed to produce initial equivalence, balancing, on all subject variables, whether we name them or not, whether we know them or not. Remember that part about everybody's IVs are your confounds? Everybody's confounds are your confounds. Everybody's IVs are your confounds. And shit nobody's thought about before are also your potential confounds. Wouldn't it be great if we had a procedure that we decided to trust? Listen to that phrase. If we had a procedure that we decided to trust that would give us balancing on all subject variables, the ones we can name and the ones we can't name. There is one truly acceptable across the board, everybody likes it, participant assignment procedure for testing causal hypotheses. Random assignment of individuals by the researcher. Random assignment is a word you may not use anymore. You can't say random assignment without adding words to it to articulate what kind you happen to be talking about. Because we're going to see 4 different kinds. Only one of which is truth, love, and beauty. Assigned the role of truth, love, and beauty. Random assignment of individuals by the researcher. Control by the researcher is going to be really important for all this internal validity. The more control the researcher gives up to other agencies, the less trustworthy the internal validity is. So in a between groups design, one of the most common procedures is you flip a coin for the first person, they get a condition, second person gets the other condition. Usually you don't flip a coin for each person because you could end up with everybody in one condition and nobody in the other. Or you can end up with a huge balance, and so this is what's sometimes called block randomization. The block is 2, 1 for each condition, randomly assigned to first, the other is then assigned to the other condition. If you do the proofs in probability theory, this is fully random. Because you're randomly assigning enough of them. Remember, random assignment doesn't guarantee initial equivalence, but we act like it does. And random assignment is more likely to produce initial equivalence the larger the sample. Now, that second one will start a fight until I explain it. So I'm not trying to start a fight this time. Well, maybe. The operation of chance shouldn't depend upon the size of the sample. You should have the same chance of an equal number of heads and tails for any even number of throws. Okay? That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about here is, let's say that somebody ends up in the wrong condition. That imbalance caused by one person being in the wrong condition is going to be much larger if there's only three people in each condition than if there's 30 people in each condition. You with me? It's not a probability thing. Let me do a quick analogy, then I'll be right there. This is why most of us would rather take a 20-item multiple choice test than a 1-item multiple choice test. Because if you get the one wrong, you're goofed. The more you do, the greater the buffer you have by some silly mistake. That's the same reason that when people write tests and inventories and things like that, they want multiple items, because just in case you were inattentive or not paying attention or stupid for a minute, it doesn't change the score any more than it absolutely has to. So that's how larger samples are more likely to produce equality. It's not a random thing, it's a representative thing. Yes? Let's say that we have two men and two women, just to take it down to two. I only have a 1 in 8 chance of getting an even split into both conditions. 1 in 8. I've got a better chance of getting both of one identity in one group and both of the other identity in the other group. That's what I mean by wrong condition. Wrong condition to produce balancing. It's not right or wrong. It's right or wrong for our purpose of initial equivalence. We good?
If you were concerned about that, would you just not do random assignment?
What are you going to do instead? Because everything else I'm going to show you we don't like. Or we like less. Notice how I phrase this. There's one that we treat as. Okay? It also points out the desperate importance of stratified sampling. One of the things you can do with stratified sampling is make sure that you've got a representative part of your sample for large subsets and small subsets. You need, you hope for, enough in the small subsets that you can get balancing for that attribute. If you only have one or 3 or 7, you could end up with a difference on that attribute. Stratified sampling, properly applied, helps random assignment. Yes?
Can you random assign from strata instead?
You can if you want to. Not everybody does, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with saying, I have carefully selected people from these 5 majors. And I'm going to take the ones in this major and randomly assign them, and this, and this, and this. Later we'll call that a particular kind of factorial design known as a treatment by subjects design. In the treatment by subjects design, we would not only sample based on and assign based on, but analyze based on that other variable as well. An even better idea than maybe the one you started with. Because we not only then get a better sampling, probably a better random assignment, but now we're looking at how that other variable influences things. Okay? It's really, really important to know what are the subpopulations of your population. And then it's really, really important to go after and get them. So that when you randomly assign, that variable is cleaned up as part of that initial equivalence. And whenever somebody says something like, well, we sampled for men and women, you ought to be asking, why just men and women? Because one of the things that's happened, and this is almost heartbreaking, you want to look for failures to replicate? Look for extensions in the population sampled. Let me explain that. If somebody has been studying just some subset of the groups in a population in a variable, and then other people come along and say, you know, we're not studying everybody. We have horribly underrepresented groups. Let's start sampling them. The results on average change with the mix of on average among whom? You with me? Internal validity and external validity are both, because of this, are both driven by the adequacy of your sample. Because without sample adequacy, you can't have comparative adequacy following the random assignment. Okay? And this is why it's another reason it's going to be really important in the spring that we start putting multiple variables together in an analysis. So that we're not fully dependent upon procedure for our elements of control. All right. Okay. For within groups, a typical process for random assignment is the first participant, you flip a coin and that determines their order, and the next person gets the opposite order. In between groups design, you're randomly assigning what condition they get. In a within groups design, you're randomly controlling the condition order. And we'll talk more about this when we do designy stuff. Now, the rest of this is all the same. Random assignment doesn't guarantee. Random assignment works better with a larger sample. Again, not because probability works better with a larger sample, but because a mismatch gets diluted out in a larger sample. Not all studies can be run with a within groups design. You're going to have a hard time running gender as a within groups design. You can't counterbalance all sets of conditions. I can say half my people got zero practices and then 10 practices. And the other half got 10 practices before they got zero practices. But no. One, I'm comparing 0 and 10. The other, I'm comparing 10 and 11. Counterbalancing, and we'll talk more about counterbalancing. Counterbalancing assumes either that the treatment manipulation completely goes away before we move you into the next condition. No memory, no non-memory impact. No physiological impact, nothing. You're who you were at the beginning of the second condition, just the same who you were at the beginning of the first. Or that the trace left behind by the two conditions has the same impact on moving to the next condition. Not going to work. So you got to stop and ask every time you see a within condition design if you like it. All right, the unacceptable procedures. Because random assignment is the best we have, by agreement. Things that are unacceptable, random assignment of groups. Instead of randomly assigning individuals, you take everybody in the one teacher's class and assign them to one condition, the next teacher's class, another condition, and. Those groups could be classes, neighborhoods, schools, cities. But we're assigning groups at random, not individuals at random. So that's a kind of random assignment. But it's not an acceptable form of random assignment to produce initial equivalence. Arbitrary assignment by the researcher. This is when the researcher makes up some rule or some partial rule, so that it's not complete random assignment. Some people get randomly assigned, some people don't. Skip down to administrative. Same problem as arbitrary, Only it's somebody else's rule, not the researcher's bad idea. Doing a lot of work outside the tower, I find it comforting to separate those two. Sometimes I'm forced into doing something that I don't want to do by the administrator, and I'm willing to blame them for that. Other times, self-assignment, not self-selection. That's external population validity. Self-assignment. I tell you the options, and you get to pick what condition you're going to be in. And then non-assignment, where some property of you defines what study condition you're in. The non-assignment? Let's say we're studying the impact of the number of siblings you had. I'm not going to be able to randomly assign and manipulate that. Now, when we start talking about non-assignment groups, there's one thing I got to talk to you about. We'll talk to you more about this when we get into data analysis. But I have to, my heart requires me to talk to you about the evil of the group labeled other. You can't have an other group. You're doing two things that make no sense. You're putting people together that you don't know have the same univariate and bivariate relations between variables. You can't do that. You can't say, I had plenty of this kind, I had plenty of this label, I had plenty of people who identified themselves this way, I had plenty of people, and then I have, so we're going to put that together into other. Either do the hard work, do the stratified sampling, get your samples up, find statistical analyses that will allow you to work with differential sample sizes. Becca and Anna can help. But don't lump them together. A couple summers ago, I did this huge analysis for a marketing company. All that we did is we went back through 60-some studies that they had run over the last 20-some years and reanalyzed them without lumping the data into an other, not accepting the other group, using techniques that allowed us to work with small samples and large samples. When they were all done figuring out the mistakes that they made based on including that other population, that lump of people that are not the same as each other, they're not the same averages and standard deviations on single variables, and they don't have the same relationships between variables. When you put those together, they decided they lost just about $42 million in profit over that same period by the statistical mistakes that were produced by othering. I kind of like that one because it puts a dollar value on it. Okay? Now, someone's identity is worth a lot more than a dollar value, certainly to us and to them. But it also has an impact on the results. Every decision you make impacts internal or external validity. Every decision you make. We live in a trade-off model world. And it starts with who's in your study. And how are you going to organize that data to analyze it? Sure. So we had one study that was run 15 years ago, and the only categories were male and female. Then we had a study that was run 8 years ago that had male, female, and I kid you not, other. Just other. Then we had two studies that were run recently that used a much richer category for that. When you analyze the three sets of data, none of the earlier stuff produced the same results as when you broke it out, you made sure you had enough of the different categories, and looked to see if they agreed instead of lumping them together. Does that help? We did it with gender and orientation. We did it with race and ethnicity. We did it with education, and everywhere we looked, almost, I'm being dramatic, everywhere we looked, damn near everywhere we looked, othering gave us the wrong answer. Now think about that. If I lump these groups together, I may change the results on the comparison between these two majority or minority groups. Holy shit. Not just did we get wrong results for the ones we lumped together, but those can lead to statistical errors on the others where we thought we were safe. Representation matters. Sampling matters. Does that help? Yes. Yeah, thank you.
I've also seen studies where they have like 12 categories to choose from and then other.
Yeah. Yeah, let's fuck it up from the beginning. Okay, that was a little harsh. Let's make it as bad as we can.
If you don't have an other, and then maybe there's a group of people who...
I'm with you. Listen, I have no way to make it easier. There are going to be many times this semester where I can't tell you how to make it easier, but I can't tell you what to worry about. Yeah.
What do you do in cases where like two people like pick the same label, but they define their label differently?
Say that louder.
So what do you do in cases where like two people pick the same label, but they define it?
Oh, you're going to do like reality and shit on me? I'm going to start with, this is where I've got to find content expertise to go with my methodological expertise. Because at this point, my methodological expertise is I know how to add another category into the survey, but I need to know how the people that I want to study describe themselves. Now, I can do all sorts of cool analyses to take a look at how different ways that people describe themselves do and don't match up on what things. Oh man, I could. That's Sunday afternoon shit. Because there's some amazing surprises out there. But you're absolutely right. I want to start with the canonical list that separates them as much as possible. Because I can go and look and see what combinations make sense. If all I want to do is compare means across groups, then I have an idea of how much variability is reasonable and unreasonable, and I can use that to think about what I can and shouldn't combine. So now I'm mixing a statistical approach and a content expertise approach, and I'm never happier. But you're exactly right. Here's a really awful one. Doing a study where one would be the first ones to introduce age into this research, working with high school students. They used the standard demographic questionnaire. That used to be bragging rights. We used the standard demographic questionnaire, which means we had the money to buy it. That was the bragging right. It used the standard decade age categories. 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40. You're thinking age. How do you fuck up age? I can understand the struggles with all different ways that we identify ourselves and our behavior. But age? Well, everybody in the study was in group 2. Everybody in the study is between 10 and 20. And the principal variable, the variable that was going to make them famous because they were the first ones to include it in the study and the analysis. And that's just age. Imagine things that are more important to measure properly than that. Great question. You guys spoil me. The quality of the questions and just the willingness to ask it, I'm spoiled. Thank you. So what's wrong with all of these? You don't know you're producing equivalents. There's a reason why participants are in the particular condition that they are. We will wax poetic about this on Wednesday, but an independent variable is supposed to be an independent variable, not related to anything. It has the value it does because of random assignment of individuals and then manipulation of those individuals. There's no reason that you're in the condition you're in. Here, for all of these, there's a reason. And that reason is a confound. We'll do more with this. All right, let's play. After being presented with the options, each patient chose whether they would receive the standard or the experimental. The researcher decided that the first 20 participants would be assigned to the treatment condition, the rest would be assigned to the control. Arbitrary. The hospital executive committee, bastards, determined that people who were over 60 years old would all receive the standard, and the others would be randomly assigned.
Administrative assignment.
Notice what's going on. These are both not completely random. Anything that's not completely random isn't random. Medical records were examined to determine if each participant had received the standard or experimental.
Natural.
I had nothing to do with it. Hell, they didn't have anything to do with it. Whether each patient would receive the standard or the experimental was determined by a coin flip. Random assignment of individuals. Arbitrary assignment. Administrative random assignment. Good random assignment. The researcher flipped the coin to decide which dormitory would receive in-room internet access and which would continue with common room access.
Random assignment of groups.
Random assignment of groups. Remember, random assignment isn't a choice anymore. We got four kinds of random assignment. One of them we like, the others we may desperately employ.